Hi, I'm John Meacham, the host of Cadence 13's new podcast, Fate of Fact, on how America and its political parties got to where we are today. Available now on Odyssey, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Good afternoon.
Bears fans, this is Take the North.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
What's happening, everybody? Welcome into the Take the North podcast, along with Dan Wiederer from the Chicago Tribune. I'm Mark Brody from The Score. What's going on, Weedsy? How are you, man?
Doing well. We have successfully crossed the bridge from whatever that was in Arizona last week, and now the Bears have a should-win game ahead of them, Grody, on Sunday at Soldier Field.
Yeah, should-win game. Yeah, and we'll get to our predictions a little bit later on. I'll just preview my prediction by saying it's going to be ugly. Right now, the Bears just don't have the power of looking great on the field, but we'll get to that a little bit later on. It's been another eventful week here at Halas Hall, so why don't we get right to our opening drive?
It's time for the opening drive.
Dan, we have to figure out what is going on between Caleb Williams and DJ Moore, and maybe even... Let's start with DJ Moore and what might be going on with him right now. And it's difficult to figure out. I think that, you know, there continues to be, and we'll hear from some of the participant. It feels to me, Dan, like there is this tug of war going on between Caleb Williams and probably all the veteran receivers on this team, but mostly with DJ Moore when it comes to exactly how they want things to be done. You have a hyper-successful quarterback, at least in college. We know how decorated Caleb Williams was, and we know how decorated DJ Moore is. Their chemistry has not been there but for a couple of games this year. There hasn't been consistent big games and big plays to DJ Moore. Seems like more misses than big plays right now. But Dan, what are you seeing right now? What are your opening thoughts on those two, on DJ Moore and Caleb Williams?
Yeah, and as you mentioned, we'll hear from both of those guys here in just a minute, but it has not clicked. And you expected it by this point of November to have clicked by now. And you've got an established, proven, high-level receiver in this league that's not producing the way he's used to producing. He's going through what are, you know, in some ways inevitable growing pains of playing with the rookie quarterback. And then there are just some moments where you can't figure out why they're not on the same page. There was one in particular Sunday in Arizona where Caleb throws a back shoulder route at the line to gain on a third and 10 play, and DJ's running a vertical route. And it's, you know, it's one of these things. That's not accuracy. That's connection, right? Like, that's rapport. That's understanding together what you're seeing from the defense. The default sense is that usually the rookie quarterback's probably misdiagnosing something, because usually the guy that's been in the league for 6-7 years knows what is coming from the defense and usually is on the same page. But whatever it is, it's just not there. Caleb threw towards DJ 9 times against the Cardinals. They only completed 4 balls for 33 yards. There was a deep shot, a shot play later in the game that's just an overshot. Caleb mentioned that on Wednesday, that he tried to throw the perfect ball rather than allowing a high caliber receiver to make a play. So there's a lot of little things here, Grody, that I think need to be ironed out. What you and I talked about in the locker room on Wednesday is that DJ seems a little bit miserable. Now, listen, of all the guys in that locker room, DJ is also one of the more difficult guys to read, because he's got a personality that you're not always sure what to read into and what to decipher and what to just feel like is nothing, you know? And so I think we've been trying to comb through that a little bit. But then this week, DJ got another taste of what it's like to be in the spotlight with a rookie quarterback when everybody's eyes are on your entire team and what it's doing, and you tweak your ankle and you run out of bounds during the middle of a play that's still alive, and then the national media jumps onto it and sees it and tries to decipher it and tries to interpret what it means. It becomes a little bit noisy. And so that was this week's CSI, right? We're CSI House Hall here, Grody. Like, last week it was Tyreek Stevenson and the Hail Mary. This week it was, what the hell is DJ Moore doing? Running out of bounds in the middle of a play. And I don't know what your thoughts are on that before we turn the microphone over to DJ.
Yeah. You know, I always, and I don't know, I know I've talked about this on The Score, probably on Take the North as well. I always go back to the end of last year when we kind of knew what was coming, and that was it's probably the end for Justin Fields. And we're doing retrospect stuff with the players, and especially somebody like DJ Moore. And I remember us, you know, doing our jobs and asking him, hey man, what would it be like to get some extra help in here, get a new quarterback in here? And DJ Moore, of course, there was no personal issues with a new rookie quarterback coming in here, a top guy, whether it was Caleb or Jaden or the guy they're going to face this week in Drake May, but we all kind of knew it was going to be Caleb. And his generalization was, well, no matter who it is, there's going to be rookie growing pains. And he kind of was like, he was already lamenting that whoever it is going to come in here and they're going to struggle and there's going to be problems and they're not going to maybe pick things up as quickly. So it's exactly what DJ Moore didn't want. And it's, again, it's not a personal issue with Caleb. They seem to get along fine. When we see them in the locker room, they've all talked about how well they get along, but to be honest, they're not getting along on the field. Let's hear DJ Moore talking about the play in the first quarter, the play, the CSI play of the week, where Caleb Williams early first quarter is in trouble. He is rolling towards the sideline. DJ Moore is within his vision, but then DJ Moore goes out of bounds, goes to the bench, and he was out of the play. Let's let DJ Moore explain what was going on right there from his perspective.
Pretty bright spotlight on the play where you ran out of bounds during scramble drill last week. What's your kind of account of what happened on that sequence?
Tweaked ankle. I was coming back to, because I seen Caleb scrambling and like ankle went in and out. I was already couldn't stop, so my momentum took me out of bounds and then I just walked off. Which the noise, I hear it, seeing it, really didn't care. So it is what it is.
Do you understand why people saw that as a bad look?
I mean, they could take it how they want to. They wish they did, and without even knowing what happened mid-play. So, I mean, can't stop y'all from doing what y'all want to do.
So you were hurting?
Yeah, the initial roll of the ankle was, like, hurting bad. So that's why I, like, hobbled off and sat down, and then I came back in and was kind of like, how you say it? I don't know. Reindeering? I don't know. Whatever it's called, however you do it, just down the middle of the field. But, I mean, I didn't stop playing the game. Like, I didn't not go back in the game. That's what it was.
Reindeering, huh? Grody? Never heard that one before.
I was going to say, I still haven't figured out the reindeering aspect of it, but he is, you're right, man. DJ Moore, while delightful, is difficult to read. Like, he wasn't mad coming into that press conference, you know what I mean? Like, maybe a little chip on his shoulder, a little bit of that, come on, guys. But I feel like he's always looking at us like, come on.
I agree. And what's interesting in that comment there that he made is he said, y'all going to do what y'all going to do. Well, the people that were doing it the loudest were former players. You know, Rob Gronkowski's on Kay Adams' podcast and saying that can't happen. Tom Brady would have got that under control right away in the moment and said that is unacceptable. Then you had Chris Long, another guy who's won a Super Bowl before, coming out with very, very harsh criticism of how poorly that looked, and particularly how it reflects on a team that's going through its own struggles right now and has questions about whether everyone's bought in. So look, it's convenient to kind of point the finger instead of the thumb at times. That was an instance where I think DJ owned it as much as he could, but then kind of stopped short of taking full accountability for it. I think ultimately this circles back to how we started the discussion though, Grody, and it's how does he and Caleb Williams, how do they find the rapport that they need to be productive as a duo? And both of those guys had an opportunity to kind of to weigh in on what they think it's going to take to get that connection going. Let's hear from Caleb first, and then we'll get to DJ. Here's Caleb Williams.
Yep. Yeah, obviously it's not in a place from the past games, a place where we would like it. Both of us, it's frustrating because you got a guy so special and not being able to connect. And hit on certain passes is frustrating for myself. And I know it's frustrating for him because as a wide receiver, especially, you only get but so many chances, so many times the ball, comes your way in a game. And things like that. So, I wouldn't put it past him that it's frustrating. But we got to figure it out. That's the whole point about football, is figuring out why things are certain ways, and finding ways to overcome or get better at them.
Specifically with the one instance the other day where you threw back shoulder and he was still running vertical, what did you guys iron out in terms of what you saw versus what he saw on that point?
I think it comes down to just talking and communicating more. We talk all the time, we laugh and joke all the time and things like that, but I think it, talking a little bit more about and communicating a little bit more about specifics of ways I see it, ways he see it, ways he's seeing it, and then keep going from there.
Talking and communicating more. I mean, that I think communicating has been the most overused word or crutch word this year. But I am trying to read Caleb Williams in terms of, I just think that there is a conflict between the two on how things are to be done on the field. And Caleb's trying to get the ball to all of these guys, trying to get the ball to Keenan, trying to give Rome his day, trying to get Cole Kmet involved. And it's just the degree of difficulty seems high right now.
Things need to get synced up. There's no question about it. I believe it was you that followed up with DJ Moore kind of asking about what it's going to take to create those lines of communication that Caleb is calling for to get that combination unlocked. This is what DJ had to say.
Caleb said he was talking about the communication between you two and that you guys have obviously good friendship, laughing and joking, all those things, but it almost seemed like he was intimating about paring down on the details more, about rock concepts, just getting on the same page on the field. Like, how do you think you can achieve that if you agree with that assessment that needs to happen?
I mean, just knowing who we're going against, the one-on-one matchups that we might have throughout the game, and then understanding on the back end the reads and where we at in situations, where he's going through the read and how fast I got to be or how slow I got to be to stay in his vision, stuff like that. So, I mean, that's the little details I can think of.
Grody, your voice sounded an awful lot like Courtney Cronin's in that segment, so I appreciate your ability to throw your voice like that. But your thoughts on what DJ had to say there in response to what Caleb had to say?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the question that I had asked DJ Moore was about is there a healthy disagreement that is going on with you guys? And his words were, there is some of that. There is some of that. You know, he didn't say that, oh yeah, that's the issue, you have nailed it, Grody. But he said that there is some of that. I go back to a few weeks ago when they were talking about Caleb being bossy and doing it. We're going to do it Caleb's way. They are still trying to find, for lack of a better word, Dan, I think a compromise on how they want things to be done. And this is another indictment on Shane Waldron, because he's got to be the guy that when DJ and who knows what's going on backstage, but when DJ Moore goes out of bounds like that, and we're all asking questions about this, and Matt Eberflus, when he's first asked about it, doesn't really remember it, or is like, I didn't, just kind of blew it off. That's where people have to use their authority. And yes, that's what Mercedes Lewis was imploring Shane Waldron to do. So here again, it just sounds like the theme, the players are running it. There's a conflict between them. Where's the offensive coordinator? Where's the teachers to say, this is how we're going to do it? Not that way, not that way, this way.
What's interesting here is that this is not a one-year partnership, right? Like, Caleb Williams is a rookie in his contract, and is going to be here for a long time. And DJ Moore at the end of July signed an extension that's going to keep him here for a long time. And the week after he signed that extension, he told us one of the reasons he was so eager to put his name on the dotted line, besides all the zeros that were on that paycheck, was that he saw Caleb Williams becoming a star and he wanted to be a part of that rise. It's a very different place that we're in here at the start of November. We got to get back closer to where DJ is truly feeling the feelings that he felt in the summer that he feels like there's a rookie quarterback that's going to really, really lofty places in this league, and he wants to be a part of that journey. They're 8 games into their partnership together. Again, this isn't something that's going to end at the end of 2024. So hopefully whatever needs to be ironed out is being ironed out, and you have, again, a long view of this thing where it doesn't necessarily have to get to peak levels by Christmas. You know, it has to get to peak levels eventually so that this organization can unlock the future that it believes it can unlock, but you're not confined to getting it all smoothed out in this year. Now, obviously we know what the urgency is right now for this football team with this record, with what's going forward. And so direction needs to be shown and improvement needs to be shown, but they don't need to be a finished product.
Hi, I'm John Meacham, the host of Cadence 13's new podcast, Fate of Fact, on how America and its political parties got to where we are today. Available now on Odyssey, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
At the end of this month.
Do they need more team meetings? Do you think that that's really what it comes down to here, Dan? Like, because
talk about that. I feel like we need to have meetings every week to discuss their meetings to figure out which meeting meets the standard of meeting accountability. I don't know that I can handle many more team meetings that draw the spotlight here at House Hall, particularly if they're not accompanied by results that come out of those team meetings. But we had another one this week. TJ Edwards volunteered it on the afternoon show on the Score earlier this week, or the midday show rather. And then it became a talking point on Wednesday at House Hall. What were your takes on meeting number 2,642 since the start of training camp?
Yeah. I mean, I think we know that the meeting after the Hail Mary loss in Washington was real, because everybody talked about it and everybody was pretty transparent about it. This one, from being out at Hallis Hall, there's kind of some defiance that went on with it. Obviously, TJ Edwards was willing to share, but Matt Eberflus just said, yeah, this is any old meeting. We meet, you know, Mondays, Wednesdays. I don't know. Do we have that? I don't know if we have that audio or not, but Matt Eberflus discussing the meeting.
He downplayed it, and I think you're right. He just kind of said this stuff happens every Monday. But we have TJ talking about why he thought it was significant, because TJ is the guy, again, that volunteered it at first, and then it was kind of like, well, wait a second, it was just a regular team meeting. But Eberflus also said he opened the floor up to players, and several players spoke up with some urgency. And then TJ on Wednesday, I think you were part of that conversation, tried to summarize why he felt it was significant. Let's hear from him next, and then we'll further the discussion.
So we have a team meeting every Monday, and you know, just at this team meeting, I just felt like it was real, and just an understanding of, you know, we're at the point where we got to go put good product on the field, right? We got to go win games, and you know, we got to do good things throughout the week to get that thing going. But also, it matters what we do on Sunday. We got to show up.
It matters what we do on Sunday, right? Like, and I think hopefully that's the ultimate sentiment that TJ was expressing there. I'm sure you are old enough and silly enough to be a Billy Madison fan. I will quote Billy Madison here and say, talky, 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 no more talky. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. At some point, this has got to translate into action. And I think that there are a lot of guys in that locker room that are like, okay, can we get past all of the meetings and the, you know, interventions and everything else that's out there to get to playing winning football at a time in the season where we need to play winning football?
I do appreciate the urgency of it, and the fact that, and we throw this around a lot, like, this team, for the most part, I don't know if every player does, but they seem to care. They seem to truly want to win. And you don't, that doesn't exist in every locker room.
I agree. And I do think that they have leaned into what they believe is healthy transparency with each other and healthy transparency with the outside world as well. And now, obviously, I had a conversation with my brother-in-law earlier this week about how you've got the old guard, you know, and I understand why Olin from a different era feels the need to push back on this stuff and say that the talking and the meetings are worthless if you don't develop a competitive edge that allows you to win football games. But this team certainly has embraced this part of their identity. And you've heard that from TJ, you've heard that from Cole Kmet, you've heard that from the other captains. So before we get to our next soundbite, I'm just wondering what you think about that level of I guess outward expression, both internally within the team and to the outside world.
Well, here's why I like it. Not just because it shows that they care, but it's been a little bit more pointed than your usual, oh yeah, we just got to come together here. And yeah, we've been talking to each other about being, you know, sort of like the way Tremaine Edmonds talks. Tremaine Edmonds is always like kind of talks in those cliches and things. And God bless him. You know, he's like Danny Trevathan was saying.
Yeah, no question.
Same type of guy, rah-rah guy. So he's not a good example of it. But Kevin Byard and Jalen Johnson and TJ Edwards, from whom we just heard right there, Caleb Williams to a different degree, DJ Moore, they're not just all saying the same thing. They're all saying specific things that they don't like, and the urgency and trying to figure it out and being honest and saying, we haven't figured it out yet. It's not like you don't hear DJ Moore up there at the lectern saying, oh, no, we're going to get this. You know, it's just going to be it's repetition. And maybe it is. Maybe it is that repetition. It's going to be easy and they're going to it will fit. They'll figure it out in time. But right now, there's a lot of head shaking going on. A guy saying like specifically what needs to get done and real frustration as opposed to what I call disingenuous frustration, because there's a lot of that that goes on too, where they act like they're upset. And I've been in many locker rooms like that where they pretend, oh yeah, man, we really got to snap out of it. No, this team is like pissed off that they're pissed off. Like Bears fans are pissed off that they're 4-4 and that people's predictions to begin the season are way askew, and they also know what's coming too. Like we've mentioned it at every podcast what the upcoming schedule is for the Bears. They know that too. It's like their non-conference schedule right now, and they're preparing for it, and they are feeling that heat the same way you and I do, and that the people listening to this podcast do.
So one of the front runners for this year's Jeff Dickerson Good Guy Award from the PFWA media chapter here is Cole Kmet. And Cole Kmet was part of an exchange on Wednesday that I thought was truly a fun back and forth here. Both of us were involved in it, just talking about the page turning efforts after the Washington loss a week ago after losing with the Hail Mary and going into Cardinals week. And Cole was kind of asked about the process of getting that page flipped and whether it was handled properly. A little back and forth that should be entertaining for our audience.
This is outspoken, though, as it's ever been since you have been with the Bears in terms of that transparency with the coaches and the players?
Gosh, I felt like last week was a little bit loud, for sure. I've seen a lot of crazy weeks here, I will say. So I don't know if I can say it was the craziest, but it was up there for sure. So I think we could definitely, as players, could have handled it a little bit better.
Give us your top five of crazy.
Oh, there's more than five.
I loved every bit of that back and forth there, because Cole's willingness to acknowledge the circus and the fact that it's been those circus organs have been playing here more than 5 weeks during his 5-season career here. Refreshing honesty. Let's just say that.
Dan, I was talking about this with Ruthie Polinsky. There was like three things on that list last year. Do you care to guess some of those, Dan? You were part of one of them.
I mean, certainly the last year, the one day, I mean, you had Alan Williams' resignation coupled with the Justin Fields, the coaching, and then second press conference in the locker room. That was one day. I mean, I can go back to
that's
to
two Matt, things right there on your top five. Right?
I know Cole certainly has the patch.com week. Matt Nagy's been fired Thanksgiving week in his last season in 2000. I get was that 21. So look, like honestly, I would love when the season ends to go to a watering hole somewhere with Cole and say, all right, give since there's more than five, we're going to challenge you to 10. Map them out for us, and just to have that. We don't have to bring it to the airwaves, but it would just be fun to get his perspective on what it's been like.
100%. And then just even on the field, and I'll just get one on the field example. I mean, even we don't have to go beyond last year. How about just opening night last year when they get whooped by the Patriots or the Packers 38-20? I mean, we could give you five things from each year under Matt Eberflus, at least, and Matt Nagy for that matter.
There's been many such weeks. The hope here, given the opponent coming to town this week, given what's awaiting them after this weekend, is that next week is not one of those turbulent circus organ weeks.
Amen. The Bears host New England on Sunday, a 2-7 team. That said, let's get to Dan's three things and our predictions. Dan, take it away.
Yeah, I'll set you up here for what should be a entertaining? That's with a question mark game on Sunday at Soldier Field between the Bears and the Patriots. The first thing to watch in this game is Caleb Williams versus Drake May. We're 2 weeks removed from a lot of hype that surrounded Caleb Williams versus Jaden Daniels. And that week was obviously a little bit different because of the Jaden Daniels injury situation. This matchup doesn't seem to be deriving the same level of hype and enthusiasm as that one did a couple weeks ago. A couple reasons for it. Obviously, the Patriots are not having the same level of success that the Commanders are. The Bears have fallen off since the trip to London, and they don't have the same buzz around them that they did a couple weeks ago. But you rewind the calendar, you know, 15 months, and the conversation in football circles was, who's the real number one pick, Caleb Williams or Drake May? These are two guys that have known each other since meeting at the Elite 11 camp, quarterback camp in Nashville in 2020 as high school players. They've kept in touch. It was interesting to hear Drake May this week talk about keeping in contact throughout college a little bit. And then obviously this will be their first chance to compete against one another in the same game. Fun matchup, if you ask me. And I'll say this, the last thing I'll say on this topic is that Drake May seems to be living the existence of a more traditional, highly drafted rookie quarterback, where you're playing for a team that had zero expectations going into the season. The Patriots are 2-7. It's not ideal, but it also allows you some of that patience and forgiveness that that rookie quarterbacks playing on bad teams typically get, because the losses don't sting as much as they do here in Chicago. And so the Patriots are coming off a really tough loss last week in overtime to the Titans. But because of where they are in their season, it doesn't derive the same mushroom cloud of negativity and chaos as the Bears loss in Arizona did. And so two different existence for these two guys. Going to be interesting to see how they both handle it on Sunday afternoon.
And people could say this matters or doesn't matter, but, and this came up this morning too, what if Drake May outplays Caleb in a big way? Like if he has his coming out party and he throws for, you know, 17 for 25 for 250 yards and a couple of touchdowns, and Caleb struggles, that will have been then the other top quarterbacks, you know, outplaying Caleb Williams.
The other footnote to this story that will be a first for Caleb Williams is he and the offense are going to get booed at home on Sunday. Welcome to Chicago. Like, you know this, I know this. The first time that they struggle, the first time that they have a three and out, if they open the game with a punt, we know how bad the opening drives have been for the Bears all season long. They're going to get booed. And that noise is going to be something that Caleb's going to look around and go, wait, I thought we were at home, you know? And it's going to be like, hey man, this is the history, right? Like this, these are the demons that are in this building. You got to figure out a way to deal with that. You got to put forth a winning effort. I think Caleb has the maturity and the mental toughness to do that against an opponent that really isn't very good. But until you do it, the worry is going to be there. And so, you know, they would really, really benefit the Bears to score first for the first time all year. You don't want to see them behind 3-0, 7-0, 10-0, whatever it may be early in that football game. And so we'll see if they can get off to a fast start.
This may be the time where, like, when they give the phone numbers of, hey, look, no, you don't have to call these guys, but here's Justin Fields' number. Here's Mitch Trubisky's number. They may or may not take your call, but they have both experienced it. Like Trubisky back in 2019, opening day of 2019, that offense was getting booed. And same thing with Justin Fields. Like, he's probably being booed last year early on. So it's jarring. It's not a good spirit in Soldier Field. Yeah.
It's a thing.
It's absolutely a thing.
So that transitions us nicely to the second thing to watch. I had a conversation today in the locker room at Halas Hall Thursday afternoon with DeAndre Swift.
Oh, nice. He's been a hard get.
He is a hard get. When you get him, he's so pleasant. Such a good dude. Really Always. Enjoyable conversation with him. We were talking for a few minutes, Grody, about two plays in Washington that nobody talked about because of the way that game ended. He's got a 56-yard touchdown that could have been a season-changing moment in that game to reawaken the Bears offense. And then two possessions later, he has one of the cooler hurdles. It's not Saquon Barkley-esque, but it was still pretty cool because not only did he hurt the commander safety, I think it was Quan Martin on the play, he churned out 10 more yards after he landed with two guys on him. And it was a really impressive run when you go watch it back. So we had a chance to talk about that. And the reason that's significant this week is because you're about to face a Patriots defense that's really bad against the run. Over the last 5 weeks, they've given up an average of 167 rushing yards per game. They're missing defensive tackle Christian Barmore, who's been out all year on the NFI list with a blood clot issue. They are missing middle linebacker Juwan Bentley, who's out for the season with a torn pec. They are missing safety Jarrell Peppers, who is on the commissioner's exempt list after being arrested earlier with an assault and battery charge. So it's a vulnerable defense. They've been run on. I think they're 26th against the run overall. And if you go back to London, the Patriots were the team that sort of replaced the Bears in London to play the Jaguars the second game the Jaguars played in London. And they got down early, 10-0 the Jaguars did. And then they just stayed committed to the run, and they ran and they ran and they ran. They ultimately ran it 39 times on 59 plays, including a stretch. And I shared this with DeAndre Swift this afternoon. 16 consecutive plays that the Jacksonville Jaguars called a running play, and they used that as fuel for a runaway victory in a game they trailed by double digits early. If the Bears don't commit to the run this week, no matter how unsuccessful it is on the first drive or the second drive, they're making a big mistake, because there's an opportunity here. DeAndre Swift sees the opportunity. He's ready to go.
Yeah, and Matt Eberflus in his Monday presser was not so subtle about saying that. When I actually a question I asked about, Kate, like, what's going wrong with Caleb Williams? One of the things he said is we're not committing to the run enough. So I think there will have been, probably already has been, a talking to another meeting for Shane Waldron.
That message has gotten through, because you're hearing in the locker room that if we can get the run established, all of a sudden our movement passing game opens up, our play action stuff, our screen game, all that stuff creates new dynamics to our offense that aren't there if we can't run the football successfully. We'll see if they get that done. Now, in order to get that done, you're going to need to be strong up front. And so the third thing to watch in this game Sunday afternoon, Grody, is sort of the injury depletion up front on both sides of the ball. We know defensively that Andrew Billings, the really, really sturdy nose tackle, is out likely for the season with a torn pec muscle. He's having surgery. Really impossible to foresee him coming back from that injury before the season ends. So that's almost certainly a season ender. That will put guys like Byron Coward and Zach Pickens into the next man up role, with the rotation flowing the way it needs to do. And they've got a step. And then on the offensive line, we talked about how the game finished last week with both Braxton Jones and Darnell Wright out and entering this week of practice in questionable status. Well, Braxton Jones on Thursday was able to be back in the practice setting in a limited capacity. Darnell Wright still remains out with, I think, what is being called an MCL sprain in his knee. And so now you've got these moving parts up front. And what do you do? Does Larry Borum shift from the left side to the right side? If Larry Borum is going to replace Braxton Jones and he's not healthy enough to play, then do you have to move Matt Pryor outside to the tackle position and try to squeeze Ryan Bates back in at the guard position? A lot of moving parts up front, and the Bears have to find some stability on both sides of the ball there, because we know they struggled to establish the run last week and they struggled to stop the run last week. Both of those things need to happen for them to win a game that's right there to be won.
I'd like to see defensively, Jervon Dexter needs to have a big game. He's had a nice year, but he's been a little bit quiet lately. And whether we should put a lot of heat on him for the leverage penalty, I'm not sure. But it's time for him to step up again and make some big plays here in the middle of the season. Are we ready for some predictions here?
We are so ready for some predictions right here.
Okay, you want to go first, man? You're hot today.
I'll go first. And we'll get our producer, Adam Stanzinski, in here, and then you can close it up.
I'm
picking the Bears in this one, Grody. The Patriots are bad. They're bad. And if the Bears have any hope of salvaging their season, you walk into your home building and you play well. You play well enough to beat a 2-7 opponent that, as I just mentioned, has vulnerabilities everywhere. They also have a rookie quarterback in Drake May who can be forced into some mistakes. He's dangerous with his legs, but he's a rookie quarterback. He's made 4 starts. This is a top-tier defense. The Bears should be able to confuse them. They should be able to get them on the ground. They should be able to get the ball away from them multiple times, and they should be able to use that as fuel for a 24-16 victory, which gets them to 5-4 and sets a little bit of a nicer stage for the lead-in to NFC North play, which begins next week against Packers.
Studs, get in here, buddy.
Hey, hi, guys.
What? Hey, it's Adam Stanzinski, everybody. Hey, how are you, man?
Hey, we're doing all right. Doing all right. I think I have pretty similar feelings to Dan on this one. It sounds like, with full understanding, the Bears have not played well themselves the last couple weeks, especially last week. The Patriots, unlike the last couple teams the Bears played, just lack talent at almost every level. I think that probably their best overall position group might be their 2 corners on defense. But I mean, like you guys were saying, that their offensive line is beat up. The quarterback is young and can be forced into mistakes. And the Bears are playing at home, which should give them a little nice boost. It's been, I didn't realize that because the London game, it's been almost a month since were actually at Soldier Field, which is, so I'm sure that'll be good for them. And, you know, look, there's a, my favorite band is Incubus. They have an album called If Not Now, When. That's this game. If not now, for the offense in particular, I'm not that worried about the defense, understanding that the Andrew Billings injury is there. But the defense has proven to be able to play well regardless of some of their injuries for the most part. Anyway, if not now, when for the offense? Like, run the ball. They should run the ball 30 times in this game. Because if you run the ball, like you were saying about with the Jags game for the Patriots, you can run against this team all day. Run the ball with DeAndre Swift and Roschon Johnson between the two of them. 30 carries is what I'm looking for. Find some nice throws for Caleb Williams. Get the ball to DJ Moore and Cole Kmet and get out of there with a win. I'm begging for a comfortable fourth quarter, but I'm going to say 25-16, the Bears win. And ideally, we get a stress-free fourth quarter, but, you know.
Those are rare, studs. Those are rare.
You know, we had back-to-back weeks of stress-free fourth quarter. I mean, I guess really you could say last week was a stress-free fourth quarter because that game was over, but it was kind of the flip side of it. So
It wasn't, though, because your franchise quarterback almost left on a stretcher at the end when they left him in.
It became stressful. It became unnecessarily stressful. So, I got the Bears 25-16.
All right. I'm trying to follow up with the Incubus comp because I also am a big Incubus fan. Studs and I have run into each other at two Incubus concerts in the last 2 years. So the song Drive, they're going to need some good drives in this this game. I'm really forcing the issue right now. No, guys.
That was good, Grady. That was good. That was good.
In a moment's notice, I'm not trying too hard over here. Okay, I'm going to give you a score first. Bears are going to win, but it's going to be 16-13. I think it's going to be a slog, guys. I mean, you guys have hit all the big parts on New England. They're not good, but the Bears just, and I'm not saying the Bears are going to be stuck in this place all year. They just are not playing well right now. And I know they've got every reason to be motivated and spirited out there, especially because they didn't stop the run. I imagine the film session that the defense went through was probably ugly. And there's probably a lot of yelling going on and a lot of guys walking out of that room with their head, like shaking their heads as to what happened. But the Bears are just not playing well right now, offensively, defensively. And then you add in those injuries, and we'll give you a more thorough look at the injury report here in just a second. So I just expect the Bears sloppy play to continue, but this is one of those games where I think the Bears will be able to get away with their mistakes because it's a bad team. I think it was Cole Kmet who said, you can get away with that stuff, but once you play the good teams, then you're not going to get away with it. So I expect some slop out there at Soldier Field on Sunday.
By the way, Grody, the New England Patriots fan existence right now apparently mirrors what the Bears were experiencing 2022, where they just want to see progress from their quarterback, but they want to lose because they want to get a higher draft pick. So they are living the 2022 life that we used to live. Good luck. I hope it works out for you. It's always a little bit painful in the short term, rooting for losses and strong quarterback play. So we'll see what life holds for them on Sunday.
And thinking that their fan base is sort of similar, passionate wise, to the Bears, eventually you're going to get pissed off at some of those losses because I know that everybody did. Let's get to our 2 minute drill before we get out of here.
The 2 minute drill.
The 2 minute drill.
Really quickly, the injury report, the following guys did not practice on Thursday: Karan Amagaji, Taquan Brisker, Mercedes Lewis, Noah Sewell, Darnell Wright, and that's it. Limited guys were Kyler Gordon, Braxton Jones, Terrell Smith, and Daryl Taylor. Practicing in full today, Ryan Bates, Tevin Jenkins, and Montez Sweat. The Sweat thing is huge. I'm still confused about Ryan Bates. Well, not confused. I still just don't know if he is going to be ready to play. I know he wasn't anywhere close to being ready to play last week, just talking to him by his locker, but I'd imagine he's probably pretty close at this point.
pretty close and maybe needing a starting role, depending on what happens with those tackles. We'll see where it goes. Two other names on that list that are really significant. I don't think we've talked enough about Kyler Gordon's absence. Good to see him back in the mix. His ability to get back with this defense will help them immensely on Sunday afternoon. And then Jaquan Brisker on the other end of things. This will mark 5 weeks out with a concussion that he suffered on a huge hit in the Carolina game and finished the football game. If that doesn't shine a little bit of a light on how screwed up the process can be in this league sometimes, the guy suffered a concussion in the game, played the rest of the game, and then missed 5 consecutive weeks after that. Mm. Scary stuff for Jaquan Brisker. I hope he's better. That's just something that we're going to have to keep our eye on until he gets back. And, I don't remember a concussion in my time covering the Vikings or the Bears that has lasted this long and kept the guy in protocol for 5 weeks.
Actually, there was, and I can't think, there was a nickel cornerback for the Bears. I'm having a mind meld right now. He was on the Bears a couple of years ago, and he didn't
Buster
play.
Screen? Was it Buster Screen?
Yeah.
And I guess Taylor Gabriel had an extended one as well. I don't think it got to 5 weeks, but it was certainly like 3 or 4. I'd have to go back on that one because I remember him talking at length about the discomfort of those early weeks, and it's going to be fascinating the first time we get a chance to talk to Jaquan.
Yeah, and just to give people a little bit of insight, I know I've said this on the podcast before, but in my one conversation with him last week, I suggested, maybe be ready for the gauntlet of games in the division. He kind of said, yeah, I want to be ready for that. But Dan, I don't know if he's coming back for those games or not at this point. I mean, it really is up in the air. And I, at this point, I understand, and I'm not trying to push the issue.
No, yeah, no. And err on the side of caution for sure in that case, but certainly scary.
Yep. No doubt about it. Dan, anything else before we get out of here on today's episode of Take the North?
Couple quick things. Eric Washington today talked about the need to get better at the quote unquote granular details as an entire defense and stopping the run. We know that it was a problem and it's been kind of a consistent leak that turned into a flood in Arizona. They got to figure out a way on all three levels to make sure that they're fitting these runs better, tackling, doing those types of things. John Hoke also spoke for the first time since the Washington game. Took heavy, heavy responsibility for what happened with Tyreek Stevenson. It was a really admirable moment from the longtime defensive backs coach here at Hallis Hall saying that that's my player. And if I don't have him prepared for those moments, that's on me.
Wow.
And spent a minute really taking the entirety of the responsibility for what happened with Tyreek Stevenson. And then talked about how Tyreek played last week. Again, disappointed to not be starting. The punishment hurt, but he came back and he responded with a performance that was more extensive than maybe he was expecting when Terrell Smith went out with the ankle injury. And so I think there were some positive vibes inside the building for how Tyreek Stevenson responded to what hopefully will be his lowest moment in the NFL. Right. And so the hope is that's behind him and his ability in his first game back to play with the level of focus and concentration and productivity that he had made the coaches feel a lot better, including John Hoke, who really felt devastated that his player and someone from his position group was accountable for one of the biggest errors in the team season.
And while we both agree we didn't get much out of Shane Waldron, I think the one thing that I appreciated from him, or I guess maybe just agreed with him, was being asked the question about regression, that Caleb Williams seems, although they love to talk about nonlinear progression and all that kind of stuff, but the regression, and he said that each week is different. He is seeing something different each week. That's true. That's not every once in a while throughout all the coach speak that Shane Waldron's give us, sometimes you do have to listen to what he's saying, and that he is, again, 22 years old, seeing a bunch of things for the first time in his life.
And it's not the same test every week. So you may look bad one week, but it's because the test was harder than anything you've ever taken. And you may look good the next week, and it's because the test is easier than anything you've taken in the last month. And so sometimes you have to measure the degree of difficulty of the assignment. Last week, as we talked about going into the game, Caleb was facing something pretty unorthodox that I think flustered him too much and ultimately led to a loss. But we'll see how he bounces back on Sunday.
More than we gave credit, I'll just point the thumb, more than I gave credit to, because I sort of blew that off. It was just like, oh yeah, good luck with your changing personnel and disguising things. Well, they did disguise things pretty well, did Arizona against Caleb Williams, no doubt about it.
One more footnote here for those watching us on the YouTube channel. You can see Grody right now. You have a sense for where I am sitting here in the basement of the PNC Center at Hallis Hall. This is a shout out to Dion Miller and Caitlin Sharkey, who went up the stairs right over here during our recording and did so with such quiet tiptoes up the stairs so as not to disturb the Take the North recording. That was really, really kind and really, really graceful by the two of them to get up the stairs without even you even noticing and without me being distracted.
I think my cat's been more of a distraction during this episode because I did the morning show today, so I was not at Halas Hall today. And I'll tell you what, Dan, when we have one of those lonely weeks in the off season where we're like, what are we going to talk about this week? I think we do reporter power rankings. And my guess is that the Shark and Dion, at least for me, and I'm thinking for you too, top five for sure.
Well, you help your cause when you show such kindness in making sure that your shoes aren't too loud going up the stairs here at Halas Hall. Shout out to them.
They're awesome and two of the best reporters in that room. Thank you. Yes, to everybody for listening, to watching the podcast, subscribing to the podcast, following the podcast, liking the podcast. Every single bit of it means a lot to us. So we appreciate it here on Take the North. And so for Dan Wiederer of the Chicago Tribune of the Score, our guy Adam Studzinski, our executive producer, I am Mark Grody, and we will talk to you soon on the Take the North podcast.
Great talk. See you out there.
Thank you, everybody. The Bears.
Hi, I'm John Meacham, the host of Cadence 13's new podcast, Fate of Fact, on how America and its political parties got to where we are today. Available now on Odyssey, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.